Today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podco.co at podgo.co. Now let's kick off the show. John and James, let's get at it. This is the Outlap F1 Podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
To Season 3, Episode 7 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. This is our 2021 testing recap. I am your host, James, along with my wonderful co-host, Andy. Tonight, a special treat for you all. Just me and Andy, little duo. What's a good duo name? Team Ramrod. I guess we'll go with Ramrod, Andy.
There we go.
That's right. No John and Deanna tonight. They're taking care of some things. In their other lives, not the F1 podcast or lives that we're sharing right now. So, Andy, how you doing tonight?
I'm actually really excited. We just watched 24 hours of Cars on Track. It's kind of got my appetite all ready to go. I'm ready to kick off this season, so let's get into it.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more there, Andy. It's gotten very, very excited this weekend. But before we get into it, I need to remind everybody that you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, and now Discord. And that's at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can always check out the link tree on our Twitter page. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can visit the website at www.outlapf1.com, where you'll find an About Us page and a Support the Pod page. Anything you can give to help us out, keep these lights on, upgrade some of the equipment, would be much appreciated. And then, of course, Deanna, she has her Relapse channel on YouTube. Make sure you go check that out. She's going back and watching all of the old races that she can find online. And I think she's coming close to finally being able to watch on F1 TV, if I remember correctly.
I think so too.
Yeah. I'm sure she will enjoy that. Hopefully she's got some better quality video work and audio to deal with coming up here. And then also to support the show, you can go to manscaped.com and use code OUTLAP. That's all one word, OUTLAP, for 20% off and free shipping. I hate to do this to Andy. Got you all riled up with the start of the show talking testing. But we just, on a bit of a somber note, got some sad news with the unfortunate passing of Murray Walker. So you got any thoughts on that, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, this is the timing of it was just kind of strange. But I'm kind of glad he got a chance, you know, if you're going to pass. I'm glad he passed when, you know, all of the F1 media was assembled and you know, and everyone could kind of share stories and everything. And that's kind of what the last day of testing was kind of really more about, more than lap times or anything else. But, you know, this was probably the original voice of Formula One for a lot of people in Europe. We didn't really get a chance to hear him a whole lot over here. My first time I ever heard him, believe it or not, was an old F1 video game for the original PlayStation. And I remember just, you know, it was this big loud British guy, and I'm like, wow, like, is that really how he talks? And then sure enough, you know, when I got more into the sport, I all of a sudden you realize, oh, that's the same dude that was in the game. So, you know, when I watch like old classic races with him doing the commentary on it, that's like, okay, now that all makes sense. But I mean, just universally loved. I mean, you could not go anywhere on F1 Twitter, you know, since this happened without everyone paying tribute. We sent out a couple of you know, RIP tweets from our account as well, simply because, you know, this is a legend. You know, this is the guy that you led into your house and you know, was got a lot of people interested in the sport. So definitely the original voice of Formula One, known for, believe it or not, something called Murrayisms, which, as I found out, was basically him making mistakes on live air, but he would just kind of go with it, and it just kind of turned into audio gold. So, you know, as much as sometimes we, you know, try to hold ourselves to a high standard, sometimes, you know, the mistakes are even better. But he just kind of went with it, and it was that just overall passion for everything that he did was why I think people loved him. Believe it or not, his last official commentary was at the USGP at Indianapolis in 2001. I got the chance to see the video where he signed off for the last time. It was very emotional. Him and Martin Brundle definitely had some very good chemistry. You know, people sometimes complain about David Croft and Brundle maybe not, you know, working off each other as well. But Murray Walker and Martin Brundle were really good together. And just, you know, just a universally liked figure across all teams, all drivers seem to really like him. Worked for a lot of different networks, I know that. So, you know, unfortunate, but the guy probably won life. He lived to 97 and was always just full of energy whenever I saw him. So, you know, sad to see him go, but RIP to a legend.
Yeah, definitely a real legend, a true icon in the sport. And the Murrayisms definitely stand out. And some of the old highlights you watch on YouTube and F1 TV and things, he's definitely got an iconic voice. And the Murrayisms a little bit kind of remind me to back in the day. And Chicago baseball fans from both sides of town can probably connect these dots. But Harry Carey was one close to us that would just kind of make mistakes. I'm sure his were more influenced by alcohol than anything else. But, it's always fun. To have those sorts of guys calling, you know, your favorite sport, and he'll definitely be missed. But hopefully, it's one hell of a season in honor of him in 2021. And there are some changes coming that have become a little bit more concrete now that some details have been revealed about the sprint races this year. So that there'll be 100 kilometers in distance, which is a third of a normal race distance. There will be points awarded for the top three only. So the podium will be getting points. P1 with three. P2 gets 2 points and P3 gets 1 point. So surprisingly, the point structure is a lot less complicated than the point structure I use for our prediction parts of the episode. So that's at least good for the fans. We can actually understand that one, I guess. Maybe I'll have to steal some of those ideas from the FIA. And then the format will be trialed at Silverstone, Monza, and Interlagos. Andy, we've talked about this a little bit, so just real quickly, are you excited for the sprint races? Are you down to try them three times this year?
I'm good with giving them a shot for, you know, to see if they do mix something up. You know, it's a tough thing, you know, whenever you're trying to mess with the qualifying format that I know a lot of people like, but I don't think this is unnecessary tinkering. If you end up getting a mixed up grid, or you end up seeing, you know, results or people in places that they don't normally are, you know, that's exciting. Let's try it out. Let's see if it works. You know, if we end up hating it after the first couple rounds, I'm sure they'll pull the plug on it. You know, I mean, they've spread it out amongst the season, which is also interesting. Silverstone will be the first one. Monza's late in the fall. Interlagos close to the end of the season. So, you know, if it's not working, there will be enough public outcry, and I'm sure Liberty and the FIA are listening to try to see if this thing is going to work or not.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that. I'm happy to try just about anything at least once. It is interesting that they've spaced them out throughout the calendar. I could definitely see that as being an out for them if they feel like they need to change it after a try or two. We'll talk more about it as the season goes, I'm sure, and it'll be interesting to watch at Silverstone, most definitely. But so that's pretty much it for the news. We can finally get into talking about the actual testing. And we'll start with day one. A quick little recap. We'll go session by session. Just some kind of like high-level notes, things you picked up on during the race. But so the morning session on, what was this, Friday, Mercedes stuck in the garage with gearbox issues. You know, I hated to see that. Really pulling my heartstrings seeing Bottas lose about 3 hours of running. And then we had similar issue with a gearbox for Haas. Also, no surprise there. Schumacher, unfortunately, lost multiple hours that he could have been spending in the car. Vettel made his debut for Aston Martin. We'll get into Aston Martin a little bit later, but not probably the debut he would have hoped for. But we did see a solid early running for Alpine, McLaren, and Red Bull. And Danny Ricciardo did lead the morning session with a minute 32.203 on the C2 tires. I think that kind of ignited some of your McLaren love. I'm sure probably got a little excited there. What do you think, Andy?
It's been a while since I've seen, you know, a McLaren at the top of a timesheet, and all of a sudden I just remember tweeting, "Oh, good day, mate."
All right, so why don't you tell us about the afternoon and evening session on Friday?
So this actually answered one of the questions that I had going into it. What we didn't know necessarily coming into it when the times were going to be, were we going to see running at night? And the answer to that was yes. So the first thing that happened once they came back from their air quote lunch break, which was like 4 or 5 o'clock their time, was a big old sandstorm that came across the track and made everything look like red. And it was like testing on Mars. So that ended up causing a red flag, and basically nobody could go out for the first hour. The track got all dusty. So eventually when cars had to come back on track, you couldn't really get a lot of competitive lap times or anything set, because really they were basically re-cleaning the track again. Carlos Sainz for Ferrari did have a spin, but he did manage to recover to post a P5 lap time late in the session. Mercedes did get back out on track, but Lewis Hamilton was limited to only 42 laps, so that really put them on a bit of a back foot for the start of the test. Bit of performance running late. Overall, it was Max Verstappen in the Red Bull who was fastest, followed by the other McLaren in Lando Norris. Esteban Ocon, Lance Stroll, and Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari rounded out the top five. James.
Good recap there. Yeah, the sandstorm stuff threw me for a little bit of a loop when I first woke up that morning, because by the time I wake up in the Central Standard Time Zone, it was the practice was far over. But yeah, all the sandstorm stuff was pretty funny. And then of course we got like a million memes about it almost instantly. I don't know how these people do it sometimes, but there was definitely a few good laughs there on Reddit and Twitter that I came across. But then moving into day two on Saturday in the morning session, I actually watched this live after many, many bourbons, and I got quite excited to see Hamilton spin. So caused a red flag. Did manage to get Mercedes a bit more caught up on running, though. He did post 58 laps. The car still looked a little bit twitchy, so we'll get into that. I'm very excited to talk about that, as I'm sure you can imagine. But Vettel, he had a very limited running as a gearbox issue kept the Aston Martin in the garage. Only 6 laps logged in the morning session. That's not very good. And that little bit of time there put him last on the timesheets. Ricciardo, strong showing in the morning session for McLaren. Again, set the fastest time of the morning again with a minute 32.215 this time. So what do you got for the afternoon evening session, Andy?
Yeah, so in the afternoon of day two, we had the Haas team racking up some mileage, but not really so much on the lap times. Mick Schumacher posted 88 laps, and for 4 hours of running, that's actually really strong. Sergio Perez, near the end of the session, was crossing the start-finish line, and the engine cover experienced some sort of a failure, and it basically like burst on them, caused a late red flag, exposed all the engine to basically the entire paddock. So all of the nice tightly packed aero bits that they're trying to hide from everybody basically kind of got exposed. People that were there taking pictures all over the place. So much for no copying of anything. But we did see our first set of quali sims appear very, very late in the session. Mercedes had to rally, and they had to put on the softest compound tire, but it was, in the end, Valtteri Bottas taking P1 very, very late, followed by Pierre Gasly in the AlphaTauri, Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin, and Lando Norris. But however, Lando Norris's time was on the set of C4s, not necessarily the C5s, and Giovinazzi rounded out the top five in the Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, that Perez footage was pretty crazy, the way that thing just kind of just like tore apart to shreds. It come out of somebody's from right behind somebody. Now I'm blanking on who it was. He was going to pass.
I think it was Giovinazzi. I think he was trying to pass Giovinazzi.
Yeah. As soon as he got out from behind him, it was just like poof, and the thing was gone. So pretty crazy. I'm sure they'll be looking into what caused that and making sure that doesn't happen again, because obviously they hope to be passing a lot of cars going into the season. So then we'll move into day three, Sunday, the morning session. My boy Charles Leclerc with an early performance run. That's the fastest time of the morning with a minute 30.486 on the C3 tires. That time would indicate a quality level fuel load. George Russell made his first appearance at the test for Williams. They had to give Nassani. I kept struggling.
Roy Nassani, yeah.
Somebody that doesn't really matter, but gave him a full day of running on Friday. Money talks there. And then Latifi had the car on Saturday. So it was nice to see Georgie boy on track. What do you got for me for the afternoon?
So in the afternoon, we got probably the best type of weather we had. The wind had been basically a factor. We talked earlier about the sandstorm. That all kind of died down. Track got cooler. Times got faster. However, in the afternoon session, Sebastian Vettel – had some late reliability issues during what we call would happy hour, which is probably the best quali sim time that you were going to get in this test. A turbo issue kept him in the garage for the last 2 hours, so he was not able to set a competitive lap time. Carlos Sainz had a problem where he could not shift out of fourth gear. That led him back to the garage for repairs, but fortunately for him, the issue was quickly fixed, and he made it out in the final hour and was able to post a top five time in the session. Yuki Tsunoda, hello, how you doing? With some very impressive quali runs on the softer tires, finishing the day in P2. And once again, Max Verstappen ends the test with the fastest time, a 128.960 on the softest compound of tire. Red Bull looking very, very strong on day three.
Yeah, I thought the Red Bulls looked really good today. And then Yuki, I mean, this kid is like some kind of fan sensation. Like, the fans are absolutely crazy for this kid. So seeing him out there on those runs was pretty sweet. And it'll be pretty awesome if that can carry on into the season. So a quick rundown of number of laps run for the weekend. We have a tie for first place between AlphaTauri and Alfa Romeo with 422 laps apiece. Ferrari coming in third with 404, followed by Alpine with 396 laps. Then we have Haas at 394, then Williams with 373, with Red Bull behind them at 369, then McLaren with 327, Aston Martin with 314, and bring up the rear, the Silver Arrow, only 304 laps ran. I don't know how much you can read from just the laps ran, but did you expect to see Mercedes in last place there, Andy?
No, I mean, typically they always throw on a set of hard tires and they just pound around and pound around and pound around when testing's like it in Barcelona. They look better, and we're going to talk about, you know, team by team kind of in a minute, but they are still not where I think they want to be in terms of everything, in terms of balance, in terms of aero, in terms of pace. So 7-time world champions looking a little bit human.
Yeah, you had an interesting point in the pre-show chat, kind of just wondering aloud if Mercedes is going to struggle without the 6 days of testing where they could normally work some things out. But we can get into that right after a quick break here from one of our sponsors, and then we'll get into a team-by-team breakdown.
Support for the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, everyone. Manscaped has just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and all the time. Manscaped has been trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement now for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. We already know that Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. With the same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to your collection. It's light, approachable, and gentlemanly-like in all the right ways. Think of it as your roommate for the night on the town to keep you fresh and ready for anything. It's calming and inviting. This signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in for an incredible woodsy and masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and 100% vegan. It even comes in a beautifully designed glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent sets the mood for any occasion. I've been personally using this product for about a month, though, and let me tell you, it smells incredible, and my significant other has certainly been enjoying it as well. Right now, our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast can get 20% off plus free shipping by using the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, one word, at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com.
I welcome back to Season 3, Episode 7 of the Outlap F1 podcast, our 2021 F1 testing recap. We just went over session by session, and now we will get into a team-by-team breakdown. Just a quick reminder, you can find us on pretty much everything these days at Outlap F1 Podcast. It's Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, Discord, all of those. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. And, of course, make sure you check out our website, www.outlapf1.com. All right, so James and Andy here. We're going to move into a little team-by-team breakdown. Andy, we're going to start with the Silver Arrows of Mercedes. Trying to win yet another title here, but there's a common theme with some of our fan questions this weekend. Philip Murphy, coming from at Philip Murphy 32 and at Photo GT or underscore GT97, both asked about our concerns for Mercedes. Do you think Mercedes would have a tougher competition this year? And how concerned are you for Mercedes? Simply put, I'm not concerned about Mercedes at all. I'm about how they've looked so far. I just don't know if it's a lie or not. Andy, what do you think about Mercedes?
Yeah, this is a team I actually have more questions about, believe it or not, than answers after, even after 3 days of running. Obviously, after the first day, they lost, you know, they had what you really didn't want to have happen to them, which is they lost time. We said it going into this test that, you know, every minute that you could be on track, you had to be doing things, had to be making laps, had to be racking up mileage, and they couldn't do it. They did improve throughout the course of the test, I thought, but they're not there. The rear end of that car does not look stable. They try to put the power down and that car wants to twitch and basically do what my car wants to do in the snow when I'm driving it, which is, you know, turn around and spin. And we saw that a couple of times, especially even late, you know, late in the day today, Lewis Hamilton on a set of a super soft C5 tires, tried to do a quali sim and dropped it in the last corner as he was trying to put the power down. So on a track that is as rear limited as this Bahrain circuit is, they look very, very vulnerable for at least maybe the first round or maybe the first two or three rounds. I would have thought had they had like a normal 6 day test, we've been in this situation before where we've seen them maybe look a little off early and then they come back, you know, do some things to the car and then that tries to fix it. They're not going to have that kind of time necessarily to do that because testing is now done. So yeah, there's concern for Mercedes. I still think I want to see it when I believe, or believe it when I see it rather. Yeah, they look as vulnerable as I've seen them in the hybrid era.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm not too worried about the team overall because I know it's Mercedes and I've got a feeling they're going to get it figured out. But will it make them vulnerable the first few races of the season? I sure hope so. I definitely think there's some reliability issues there as well. I mean, the highest lap count finish for a Mercedes powered team was Williams in sixth place with 373 laps. I mean, everybody else is below them there. So that's kind of an interesting thing to see. And then another thing that there's been some talk about is it seemed like Mercedes was trying to go with a little bit higher of a rake angle this year. It seemed like the cars with the higher actual rake have showed less losses due to the changes of the rear floor coming into this year. So it looks like maybe Mercedes tried to change that. Could that potentially be part of the problem? I mean, I don't know. I'm not some like a smart physicist type person, but I was hoping maybe you had an opinion on that.
I mean, when they launched their car, they specifically mentioned that they didn't want to show certain parts of the floor. And then they came out and they debuted it. And then we saw it and we went, oh, well, that would be why they didn't want to show anybody what the floor looked like. But we don't know necessarily, is it really working for them? And then again, like I said before, is it only not working because of the individual characteristics of this track versus a track that they go to more often? It's not that they don't know it, but you know, so like I said, more questions than answers really for Mercedes at this time. Obviously, we don't know if the trick floor has worked. We're going to find out in 2 weeks if they show up for free practice and that trick floor is not there. Well, then we'll know what was causing a lot of their issues. So, you know, they have work to do, probably the most intense amount of work that they have going into a season that they've had in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they bit off more than they could chew with some of those massive changes they made to the floor. And it will be really interesting, FP1 here in a couple of weeks, to see if what floor they have, if they're going to stick with this one or if they really think that's the main issue. But even their trackside engineering director, Andrew Shovlin, was quoted as saying that their team's own data shows that the W12 is behind on pace of the Red Bull. So hearing that makes me excited. I'm not just excited because I'm not a Mercedes fan, but as a fan of F1, if we could get some more competitive racing between the teams at the top, that would do really well for the sport overall. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because it is Mercedes. it wouldn't be the first time they've deceived us. So, you know, fingers crossed, but I like the early signs here. So speaking of contending with them at the top, we have Red Bull. So they do not appear to have taken their traditional step back this year. What do you think off the top of Red Bull?
Very impressed. I thought that of all the cars that I saw, and we know that this year they were trying to do that 10% reduction in downforce, I think Red Bull has handled that specific issue the best. That car looks planted whenever I've seen onboards or whenever I've seen, you know, different shots of the car going around a corner, they don't look very twitchy. They look planted. It is probably the most aero sound car, I think, right now on the grid. The Honda power unit looks to be on pace with all of the others. So you've kind of got the good marriage of really good aero and a power unit that's competitive. And hey, look, you know, they topped the timesheets today in the best weather. So, you know, they look to be at they. Both drivers have looked good in that car. Verstappen looks to be super motivated. That's the type of guy that's going to smell blood in the water. If Mercedes is not, you know, shutting the door like they always do on position one and two in qualifying, this is the guy that's going to take it, at least early on.
Yeah, I mean, you get Verstappen excited with a chance to race with the Mercedes, and you have that extra motivation of him having a teammate who's proven again. I mean, we could just see a whole new level of Verstappen, which is hard to believe because we've already seen some pretty amazing Verstappen, but he continues to mature and get better each year. If he takes another step and that Honda can back it up, I mean, that we could be in store for something special with him. And there is belief, I've heard some whispers, that Honda has provided them with a power unit this year with some updates that normally wouldn't have released until the 2020. But with them backing out after this year, they're kind of putting them on there now. This could obviously work out really, really well for them, or could lead to some power unit reliability issues. But teams are allowed to develop the power unit if it's for reliability issues this year, even with the engine freeze. So it's kind of funny how Red Bull fought for that engine freeze, and now they might completely exploit it at the same time. So just a complete master stroke, if that's the case, by Helmut Marko and Christian Horner. But just more awesome teamsmanship, I think, from Red Bull there. So bravo on that. You got anything else for Red Bull before moving on to your squad?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, Honda bringing their updates forward when they were back in the, you know, the pain of the McLaren partnership. I used to always be screaming, like, why don't you just bring your updates? Who cares if it breaks? It's breaking anyway. Just let it go. And they never would do it. And now here, of course, you know, now they're backing out. They don't have any reputation to lose at this point with regard to the power unit. So they bring all the updates now. So, you know, I think it's going to be, like you said, it's either going to be a hit out of the ballpark or they're going to strike out on it. I didn't see anything that looked like Honda reliability problems in this test. So I think they have to be breathing a really good sigh of relief for that. And maybe they've done a masterstroke and they've caught everybody napping.
Yeah, that's going to be definitely something exciting to watch. Cause if it works, if we could get a battle at the top, it'd be pretty good for everybody involved. So McLaren, yep. Andy, why don't you tell us about your team?
So the first thing that I noticed when I saw the car out on track is the new nose. Yeah, that new nose plays. It looked very disjointed on the Renault, you know, with the Renault power unit last year. This thing looks sleek. It looks like it belongs there. Really, really interesting aero package. That paired with a new style of rear diffuser. This was something else we talked about, that they had covers when they launched the car over the diffuser. And then during their filming day, they literally photoshopped any sort of pictures of the diffuser out of there. Now we know why. It's a new style of diffuser. It's got the paddock talking, simply because it's kind of a loophole in the rules that they seem to have found. I don't really know how to describe it, but it basically limits some of the downforce that the FIA was trying to pull back out is now being given back to the car. And it looks like it's working because, number one, the other question we had coming into it for McLaren was, were they going to be able to run reliably changing engines? That answer is a definite yes. Of all the Mercedes teams, they did not have any of the same gearbox problems that plagued Mercedes Works or Aston Martin. So that was a positive. No power unit issues from what I could tell. And, oh, by the way, they were always near the top of the timesheets. So needless to say, my excitement level for what I saw from the team, just Brett Nucular for the first race. So I'm super excited. James, any thoughts?
Well, it's just interesting hearing you talk like that, Andy, because when Ferrari exploits the loophole in the rules, they're dirty cheaters. But when your team does it, it's a master stroke of genius. So kind of interesting to hear that angle of it. But no, I think they looked really exciting. You know, I loved seeing Danny Ricciardo in the car and doing well. You know, I like rooting for McLaren, so I'm excited by what they showed us. And I'm sure I know the answer to this question, but you told me that the diffuser should be legal and let it play.
I think what you're going to see is you're going to see within maybe two or three rounds, all teams basically have that same solution. So, yeah, I think they've run it up the chain. They've had it. The FIA was involved with it. They've approved it. Other teams are not objecting to it other than saying, maybe we should have done that. So, yeah, I mean, it is a loophole in the rules, but, you know, that's what teams do. I mean, even with Ferrari, with the engine thing, I actually would give them credit for trying. They just got really shut down on it, unfortunately.
All right, yeah. I guess, I agree with what you're saying there, so it'll be interesting to see what other teams do to catch up in that regard. All right, so let's move on to another Mercedes-powered vehicle here with the Aston Martin. We actually had a fellow American F1 podcast, if you can believe that, ask a question from @JumpTheStartF1. They ask, are you concerned with what Aston Martin showed this weekend? They looked off balance and slow. Andy, how do you respond to that?
Today they did. I think earlier in the test, they showed some pretty good pace. But it was a disjointed session for them. Them and Mercedes, I think, were the two teams that probably had the most amount of reliability issues throughout the course of the test. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough to the whole thing with a successful test is one program builds on the next and builds on the next and builds on the next. And unless you can make that progression, it's really hard to get any sort of results out of it. But a lot of it, I think, for Vettel was just getting familiar with the systems and everything else. Lance Stroll had some good pace when they would do qualifying sims, but they're not the darlings that they were at this point last year. They haven't shown up with something that no one else has necessarily thought of. So they've got some development work to do, but don't count them out because they are very well funded and going to, I think, they'll show before the end of this year, I think, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Vettel move obviously is one of the ones a driver goes to a new team this year. It's got to be tougher than a normal year. There's still plenty of COVID issues and things that they're doing differently. Probably can't spend as much time with the team face-to-face at least. So I wonder if that might hamper his development a little bit. I know me and John will have a bet going, so I'm going to be hoping it does hamper him quite a bit. But did show some signs of that this weekend, so it got me a little excited. I think I might have to up what I'm bringing to the table for that bet. If you want to,
well, maybe
if you want to split it with me, there's still time too, Andy. I get on board with that. So now we'll move into Alpine. So no question on the Renault power unit reliability throughout the test. So that looked pretty good. What do you think about their true pace without party modes?
I mean, that's really hard to tell. You know, the quali sims. Yeah, I mean, this is one where I just, again, more questions really than answers. We knew the Renault power unit last year was one of the quickest, but you couldn't necessarily tell, at least throughout, you know, this test. What I can see is that Fernando Alonso looks very motivated. He's going to be a factor in that midfield battle. I don't see Alpine necessarily coming up on the top three or four teams, but they're, I think, a solid five right now. And that's a really good base considering all the changes that they've had to do. You know, we're going to talk about in a minute. Just kind of the look of the car is massively different to what it was last year. Right.
Yeah. I mean, and now that you bring that up, we might as well get into it. There is a huge air box. And that was pretty much the talk of testing when it first hit the track. You know, it seemed like, From what I'm hearing from some of the tech talks and things that have been out already on it, they basically took the radiators and the coolers out of the side pods and put them on top of the center line of the car, which has then risen the center of gravity, which typically would be a bad thing for a car. But apparently from their tests, they've shown that the smaller air pods give them actually a bigger aero gain to make it worthwhile for them to take this risk. So, I mean, when they do side-by-sides of it, it looks like real thick, like three teams thick. Super interesting. And then, of course, they're showing some cars from like back in the old days that had just completely ridiculous designs for the airboxes. So that was some chuckles there on Twitter and Reddit as well. But I mean, what do you think? Is this going to pay off for them, or is this just a gamble that maybe they're just taking with this last year of aero regs?
I think, well, they've come out and said that they think it's a bit of a compromise, which is always, that's the PC term for, well, it's not exactly what we'd like to do, but we had to. If they would have had more development tokens, they may have been able to, you know, counteract that effect. But I think they were more focused on trying to get their engine to maintain power and reliability. We knew they had power. They had to work on reliability, and this is looks like to be their shot at fixing it. So maybe there's a little bit aero hindrance, but we're going to see how it runs in a pack. As it is on its own, I mean, when Alonso was at the wheel, it tickled some of the tops of the timesheets for parts of the sessions. But ultimately, they kind of fell back a little bit. So, you know, again, what you never know with testing, and when you look at lap times, you never know the fuel loads. You never know really what engine modes they're in. Everybody's running something slightly different. So it's really hard to predict apples to apples type things. But I think they're there. They're solid. And we're going to have to see. We don't have another Renault-powered team, unfortunately, to compare them against. So that's kind of tough. But, I think they had a solid test. They got a lot of mileage in it, and I think that's what they wanted to get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a team like Alpine this weekend really just displays how frustrating testing can be for fans and podcasters and things, because we want to make all these wild assumptions, or at least I know I do. But it's tough because you get presented with sometimes more questions than answers throughout the weekend. So Alpine's definitely the top of the list, maybe in that regard. But it's just another thing that gets us excited for the season and to actually see these drivers driving these cars in anger. So talk about making wild assumptions. Let's talk about Ferrari. a solid base to start the season with. 2021 definitely doesn't appear to be like another 2020. Leclerc and Sainz had sort of a quiet confidence this weekend, which I love seeing. The power unit looked a lot better. The ultimate pace, still not quite there potentially, but it's a lot closer than it was last year. So Mattia Binotto even came out and said that the straight line speed is no longer a disadvantage for Ferrari. So that was music to my ears. One of the few things he's ever said that I enjoy listening to. I just hope he doesn't end up being a liar. Because I am still banging the Fire Mattia drum, and it will only get louder if he screws me again this year. But I thought overall I was pretty excited about Ferrari. I try and don't let myself get too far ahead of myself. But I saw some things, some onboards that I really, really enjoyed. I love seeing Carlos Sainz out there in the Ferrari. I don't know if it got me on the same level of excitement as maybe the McLaren did at points this weekend for you. But I was definitely getting pretty amped up with some of the highlights I saw. What do you think about Ferrari overall, kind of from your normal level-headed view?
I think clearly they have made a step. This is not going to be a repeat of last year. They are not. The body language looks a lot better. It's another team that I don't think is all the way there, but they're definitely moving in the right direction. Car at times looked a little twitchy, but a lot of cars looked a little bit twitchy this weekend. So I can't really say that they were an outlier in that respect, especially given what was going on with Mercedes. We had a couple of spins, but nothing really, really, really crazy about it. The weird reliability, I mean, I was glad to see, believe it or not, today that Carlos Sainz was able to get back out onto the track, because I thought, oh, you know, if Ferrari's now having reliability problems, that's a big issue. Yeah. And it seems like the bug wasn't the power units, it was the gearboxes. So when he couldn't shift out of fourth gear, I'm like, oh my God, you know, here's another gearbox that's got another problem with it. But whatever it was, they were able to fix it. They got him back out. He was competitive. Leclerc this morning, in the heat of the day, I thought was actually very impressive. They clearly decided that they were going to go out for some performance running this morning. And it showed with him being near the top of the timesheets in the morning session, which is the harder of the two to set lap times. I think there's a step. What I don't know with Ferrari is how far that step is going to carry him early part of the season.
Fair points, all of them, Andy. I don't know if I would have taken that answer as nicely as if it had come from John or Deanna, but from you, I'll take it. So let's move into AlphaTauri now. Potentially a sleeping giant, a monster in hiding. I mean, what do you think about AlphaTauri? Because they seem pretty exciting.
Yeah, my note on them is do not sleep on these guys. Quietly quick, racked up laps. Pierre Gasly looks really confident. And oh, yeah. Yuki Tsunoda did not put a foot wrong in his first drive in an F1 car and showed really, really good quali pace earlier this morning. All of a sudden, it was like he's P1, P2, P1, P2. Him and Verstappen were going back and forth, so it was kind of a Honda showcase this morning. So, I think AlphaTauri, just like they did in Monza when, you know, all of a sudden there they are in P1. There's going to be a couple of races this year where there they are in third, second, maybe even first. You know, another shock win won't be quite so shocking because they've hit the ground running and it looks really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, would you say about AlphaTauri, they're probably F1 Twitter's like darling team with Pierre Gasly and now Yuki Tsunoda, and with that car looking good, I mean, they're just going to take F1 Twitter by storm because it seems like everybody kind of loves, it's hard to hate either one of those guys. And for most part, everybody loves Yuki, and more people are falling in love with Pierre Gasly with what he's shown since getting dropped from Red Bull. So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you on this team. They're kind of like that underdog that you want to root for, and they can pop up and steal a win. They've showed us that. And they've done nothing but change our minds on that. It almost makes me believe it even more that we could see another surprise from them at some point. And I'll be rooting it for them when that time comes for sure. So moving on to the other Alpha team, Alfa Romeo. So they're benefiting from improved Ferrari power and reliability, which is really nice to say out loud. But they haven't quite shown that they are moving up the order quite yet. Just any quick thoughts on Alfa Romeo's weekend?
Kind of maddeningly inconsistent. Race pace, really tough to kind of tell. Quali pace, really, I think, dependent on, you know, they love to do what we would call an F1 glory run, which is minimal fuel, put on the softest possible tire, send the car out for one lap, and let's see how far it gets up the timesheets. And they kind of did that this morning with Raikkonen. So, you know, you look at that timesheet and you go, oh, well, you know, Alfa Romeo has to be super competitive, right? Well, not so much when you actually dig into the underlying data behind it. So, yeah, I think that they've made a step. Again, like Ferrari, it's a step. I don't know how far that step will take them. Having to catch the teams that they have to catch, given how good all the other teams have looked, I think, I don't see them necessarily. I think they're kind of in that P7 in the constructors almost before the season has started. I think we probably know something about where they're going to be. They're not in the back. They're not in the front. They're just kind of there.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums it up. I can't add anything at all to that. And then we can move right into Haas. Anything you got for Haas, Andy? Say something nice.
Well, the car's reliable. Ferrari power unit seems to be working well. They got it 3 days before testing. They fired it up. So they didn't have any issues there, which was probably a big sigh of relief for the team. No real pace shown from either driver. A little bit of quali pace today from Mick Schumacher, but I think race pace, they're definitely in most of the sessions we're pulling up the rear, and that's kind of where I think they're going to be. They may not be like Williams of a couple years ago off the back, but I think someone has to be bringing up the rear of this field, and I think it's going to be Haas F1 this year.
Well, and if it's not Haas, it's going to be Williams. Really hard to tell where they're going to be since we couldn't really see the driver evolution between days. Racked up good mileage and good data, but no real clue on true pace yet. That having been said, points are a possibility, which for Williams is that's pretty much the nicest thing I can say about him right now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely better. Their testing program, because they gave Roy Nissany a full day. Okay. And that's
in speed, which I can't believe that he got a full day instead of just a half day. Like,
yeah, I mean, well, that's because pay driver and money talks. So, you know, it's in his contract. You know, when they brought him on, he gets a day of testing. And, you know, in a 6 day normal test, it's not that big of a deal. In a 3 day test where, you know, you could not see any driver evolution. However, what I do have to say, between Latifi and George Russell, they racked up a lot of mileage. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like they weren't trying to make up for it. But you couldn't necessarily tell between, like, you could tell where, like, Daniel Ricciardo was on day one versus day two. You can't do that with the Williams drivers right now. So interesting to see where they're gonna shuffle into the ultimate field. But I think it's gonna be between them and Alpha, just kind of like we saw last year. These three teams, I think they've all made a step forward, but I don't know if it's enough.
I mean, leave it to Williams to actually get the car to testing on time in one piece, but then still waste the whole day on somebody who's not going to be driving for the team during the season. So I mean, hopefully it was worth it financially at least. That wraps up the team by team breakdown. You got any kind of like overarching high level views on testing overall? Maybe some excitement going into the season.
My big thought is this first quali session in 2 weeks is going to be awesome. There is so much. We have not had this in F1 where we're going to show up to a weekend and we really don't know what we're going to see. For the last 5 to 7 years, it's been, well, we know Mercedes is going to be mm-hmm. here. Red Bull might be right behind them. Can they maybe do enough to take it to them? Well, probably not. We know where that's going to happen. I can't tell you who's going to take P1 next in 2 weeks. It could be one of maybe three teams. Dare I say it's between Mercedes, Red Bull, I would say Red Bull being the favorite, maybe even McLaren being the second favorite, and maybe Mercedes being a little bit still on the back foot being the third favorite. Yeah, who knows? Now, that having been said, we could always show up and see Mercedes do what Mercedes has done, and you know, and that ends the excitement. But I honestly am thinking we're going to see something that we haven't seen in a while, and that's variability and an unknown result in a couple of weeks, and I am so excited for it.
So basically, Andy has stopped drinking the McLaren team Kool-Aid and just started injecting it. He's just mainlining that shit straight into his veins. He's ready to go, looking for McLaren number two and quali in a couple of weeks. I mean, I'd love to see it. But yeah, this weekend got me super excited. You hit on all those important points about we don't know what's going to happen, and that's the most exciting thing. I mean, just it'd be so cool if Mercedes gets off to a bad start. Even if they end up winning at the end of the year, at least like give me a comeback story or something, like make them fight for it. That's all we can ask for right now with the way things are in F1. So super exciting for the year. Make sure you keep listening. I know some of my like early projections in my head really were thrown for a loop, so I don't know what the hell I'm going to do next Sunday when we record our season predictions episode, but it's going to be tough. I guess the one good thing is there's no way they can be worse than my predictions from last year. I'm pretty sure I can guarantee I'll be better than that. But yeah, I mean, totally thrown for a loop on what I think some of these teams are actually going to do now after seeing them on track for a total of 24 hours. So, you know, thanks for joining me here, Andy. Good episode, sir. And we'll talk to you all in about a week's time. We'll do the season predictions episode, and then it'll be time for our first race preview of the year in just about a week and a half. So that's got me excited as well. So for that, we're done tonight. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I mean, also one last reminder: Drive to Survive drops next weekend. Check it out if you're new to F1. It's a great way to instantly learn all the stories that we're talking about. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast. Or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.